Okay, we're live, so I'll just let this go a second and we'll come back on.
Okay.
You're listening to Truth Quest with Melody on KHEN LPFM Radio 106.9 Salida. And we're streamed on the internet at khen.org. And Truth Quest programs are archived at www.gimmesometruth.info. And I want to say I'm sorry to see that this is our last program with Communidance with Karen, but I'm sure she will be moving on to something is more adventurous than even this, but this was fun while she was here. And again, I want to say I have a special guest this evening, and it's Marty Oakley. And before I get into that, I want to also say the views expressed on this program are those of myself and of my guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the KHEN staff, volunteers, or board of directors. And Marty, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Well, great, great. Marty, I'm going to let you tell the audience a little bit about yourself, and then we can kind of start visiting from there, because I think we both have a lot of interest in common on what we do here. So go ahead.
Well, I run the PPJ Gazette Online, and I also have my own blog talk radio show called The True Squad. And I work closely with Barb Peterson at farmwords.com, or .info, excuse me. I've been a political writer for more years than I care to count, and have been published worldwide and never made a dime. So there you are.
Well, there but, I know we have something in common.
Yeah. And I just get into one thing after another. Mostly what I do, Mel, is to read legislation that's upcoming and dig through it, backtrack all the changes to code and title and the redefining of words, and to find out what they're really doing. And it's a real eye-opener, and sometimes it just makes you want to run around the room and tear your hair out of your head.
They definitely keep us busy, don't they?
Yes. It's so deceptive. And so much of UN Agenda 21 is now being implemented by regulation in these corporate federal agencies. And people are totally unaware of what's going on. And most don't even want to hear about it, which is really sad. But I just keep plugging away like many others do. And that's basically where I'm at.
Well, I take it that you're a grandmother, is that right?
Yes, I am. I have two granddaughters living with me right now, that 12 and 13, and I have three other grandchildren and two grown sons. And so my family is expanding, and I enjoy that.
And so what made you decide to, get into doing this sort of
I've always had an interest in politics, and particularly history. I am a avid history buff, but from the standpoint of I like to read original documents, correspondence. It tells you more of the story of what's really was in the mind of the people that founded this country. When you read letters from one person to the other person and what they really intended, and you bypass all of this, the framer said this and the founder said that, and our interpretation is, well, that's not it at all. That's what they want you to believe. And most people will not go and look at any of these diaries, these letter journals, none of this, and you see what these people actually intended. And it is nothing at all compared to what we are being told was intended. One of the things that I found extremely aggravating in the last year was that my young granddaughters were being told in school that the Constitution was a nice document, but it was no longer relevant. And I went ballistic. And then they came home telling me about how Australia is way ahead of us because they are totally in a global market and they're the most successful country in the world because of it. And, of course, I had to rearrange that So it's just been a series of things, but I had accidentally gotten into writing here publicly at least 10 years ago, and it was the result of some letters to the editor I had written, and they approached me about doing a monthly column, and I did, and it just went from there. I eventually opened up the website, and because I thought doing my little newsletter by email had become too cumbersome. And so what had happened was I had over 3,000 people on the mail list in the United States and Canada. I thought, well, I'll just open up a website and that'll make it easier. And it was like stepping in a hornet's nest. But it has just gone berserk from there. And like I say, the subsequent radio show. And I work on many, many different things, as you know. And but that's basically what I do.
Well, you know, once you find that you are getting into issues that are taking place out there, you find you can't just, I mean, to just be able to focus on one thing is just ignoring so many other things going on out there that are related. Because it all ties in together, as far as I can see. It's just some things you have to step out a little bit further to bring them in.
Well, and that's the thing, too, and what has come to light, and we touched on this in an earlier conversation, is this, and I consider it the liquidating of America. And I think, you know, I've heard other people refer to it as the same thing, and that's such an apt description. We, as
like
a population.
Like we're in receivership. Yeah.
Yes. We are under assault from many, many different angles. And to me, one of the worst things that has happened in the last 10 years, especially, is the commodifying of human beings. If we aren't selling prisoner bonds on Wall Street through Merrill Lynch, selling them to China, and actively putting as many people into prison as we can so that we can farm them out, farm their labor out, and profit from it, we're drugging foster kids, leasing them out to pharmaceutical companies for the testing of psychotropic drugs and other medications and vaccines. And when Florida tried to pass a law making that illegal, the FDA showed up down there swinging bags of money, and of course that didn't pass. And this, and then we get into, of course.
But you don't think it went away, do you?
No, heck no.
It just kind of morphs into something else. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, the corporations do what they do on Wall Street. I mean, if they can't think up a new and unique way of doing something, they'll go drag out the old bag of tricks and then just put a new name on it. And you know, they're back in business.
Well, that's just it, too. And like I say, this is basically the liquidation of the middle and lower classes. And people can say we don't have a class system, but we do. The middle class is particularly under assault. And at that level, what they are after now and actively targeting and pursuing is the elderly and disabled. And what they... It is the most horrendous thing. They establish these predatory guardianships. They get an emergency petition, and every state has written new statutes saying that due process does not have to be abided by when it comes to guardianship, conservatorship, because it could be an emergency situation that required an immediate response from the state, which means a predatory guardian just stepped in there. And somebody got identified as having large assets. And once they do this, and people don't seem to understand that when you become a ward of the state under any capacity, whether it's as a foster child, as a disabled adult, as a disabled child, or an elderly person, when you become a ward of the state, you lose all your civil rights, all your constitutional rights. You have no rights of any kind. These children that are in foster care have absolutely no rights. And it is under this premise that they are leased out as chattel property. But don't to the pharmaceutical companies.
But Marty, don't they also pass that off to sell, you know, sell the idea to the public as though they do have rights and that the state's stepping in to give them their rights? And they, but you're saying they don't give them any.
No, and in fact, I think one of the biggest frauds being perpetrated on the public is the deception of protective services. Anytime you see protective services, I read recently that the statistics on children alone, their statistical chances of dying are 600% greater under protective services.
Wow.
And this is across the country than if they were just left where they were. And when it comes to elderly people, we have laws in many states, Colorado, for one, that has laws calling for a wellness check. And it sounds fluffy and fuzzy, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like we're only concerned about you. But what they're actually doing is kicking in people's doors and claiming they're doing a wellness check. And this is in their law out there, in their statutes, that they can do this at any time. And if you refuse them entry, they can batter your door down and take you physically and by force out of your own home, hold you indefinitely while they determine whether or not you're competent, and you can end up under a guardianship. And, of course, the only wellness checks they do are on people that are living in, you know, the nicer homes with liquid assets and investments and property ownership. The people that don't have those things, well, they're pretty much on their own. And
now do you have instances where that you know about on that they've done that in Colorado?
Yes, I do. I had one case in particular. I had the gentleman on my show, and his mother, a 92-year-old woman, was on the phone, and it was recorded her screaming for help that someone was trying to beat down the door. And this woman was totally functional. There was not a competency problem. There was nothing. She had been identified as having a rather costly home and some liquid assets of a sizable amount. And they began their wellness check on her. She refused to let them in. Well, they immediately did a search on her to find out what all she owned and what she was worth. And like I say, this woman is on the phone screaming for help, help, help. Somebody's trying to break in. And she's talking to 911, and she's telling them, send the police, send the police, call the police. And it's the police beating her door down. The woman is hysterical when you can hear this bang, bang, bang in the background as they're battering her door. And the woman is hysterical. They took her out of her home in handcuffs, and they planted her firmly in a nursing home that was a participating partner in this scam, and immediately began drugging her with Zyprexa. And Zyprexa is not approved for use on the elderly because it can cause the onset of dementia and it can cause sudden death. But it's used routinely on these people. And the son of this lady tried to bring this evidence into court and tell the court, they're giving my mother this drug that's not approved for use and it's making her dysfunctional. And he only knew this from talking to her on the phone. He was only allowed to speak to her on the phone. In almost every one of these cases, the first thing that predatory guardian does is file complaints, lodges charges against family members, friends, anyone who might come forward to intervene for that victim. They lodge charges against them of abuse and neglect and mistreatment, and the neighbors said this and so-and-so said that. And 99 times out of 100, this turns out to be unfounded. And it's dismissed. These charges are dismissed. But in the interim, Mel, these people are forced to wage a battle. And they are forced financially to defend themselves, to publicly defend themselves. And this goes on all the while that their parent or their loved one, whoever it is being held hostage. Basically, you can't even say for ransom because they have no intentions of letting these people go until the entire estate has been robbed. And this is what it is. It is legalized theft and robbery.
Well, you know, one time, years ago, I sat down in my boredom and sat down and looked at the revised statutes. And then I noticed that a lot of the laws set it up to where the state gets a lot of these things by default, or say like a life insurance company gets the proceeds by default. And now it's been a while since I've looked at it, but at that point in time, that's what I believe I was reading. Say, like, if you don't claim a life insurance policy, it goes back to the company. Well, you know, they're supposedly supposed to use due diligence to get a hold of you, but, you know, that, you know, kind of remains to be seen as what is due diligence and how far after you've had some of these policies that have been around for years. So when you have things like this take place, these guardianships, what you're talking about, any of these things, people need to understand if they read those statutes, a lot of times they'll give them a pretty good clue of what can go on if the entities they're dealing with is following the law and not just policy. So, I hope that people start just don't go and ask questions to the very people that they're having to fend off when it comes to what their rights are and how to, you know, take care of their parent or their child, because often that, you know, they get stonewalled.
Well, you know, the other side of that is too, Mel. These are all agencies that masquerade as public service. You know, you got Adult Protective Services, Social Services, Child Protective Services, this one, that one, another one. And all of these agencies are dependent on funding, and funding is dependent upon how active their agency is. So it's in their own self-interest, to keep their paycheck rolling in to stay busy. And so this has become a method of enrichment across the country. When these guardianships kick in, when these predatory guardians step in, and there is a whole system, a whole network of them operating across the country, and they're operating in conjunction with probate court judges who profit. It is to in that probate judge's financial interest to keep that case rolling. And not to let it be resolved, because he gets or she gets a percentage of that case. Every time there is a motion made in that court, he's allowed or she's allowed to tap that estate and take a fee for that. And on the West Coast, that runs about 2-6%. And as you move towards the East Coast, the average is more like 6-9%
okay,
of the value of the estate.
Okay, now that isn't just in estates, though. That's, isn't that just about in any case?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And then see, these judges have 801Ks. They don't have 401Ks like us ordinary common peons do. They have 801Ks. And this is all through, it's called the retail, what is that? Let me see here a minute. I wrote it down. Legacy Treasury Direct is what you ask for. It's called Treasury Retail Securities. And you can go, it's the Federal Reserve Bank, like in my area would be Minneapolis, and they are the Federal Reserve Bank, in your region, is the physical agent for the U.S. And
the Federal Reserve Bank is for the physical agent for the U.S. on these?
Yes, yes.
And this is a foreign entity?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. So what you want to do is notify the Secretary of State's office first, that you want a copy of the oath of office of that judge. More than likely, they're not going to have one on file. You can get that judge immediately dismissed, and any rulings he has made dismissed. Almost no judge these days has an oath on file, which is required under code and statute and law. They must have one, but they're to stop anyone from suing them for not honoring their oath, they just don't take it. But it has to be on file at the Secretary of State's office in your state. And then what you need to do is you go to this Federal Reserve Bank and you tell them you can contact them in your area by email, you want the Legacy Treasury Directory, and that's a PDF 5182 form. And this will pull up all the judges that you name or want and their oaths and whether or not they have one on file. Now, the other thing is this also ties into their surety insurance bonds.
Okay, I was wondering when you get to that.
Yes. And once you make a complaint against that judge, either for not having an oath or for breaking the law in his own courtroom, for violating your rights, violating the rights of a family member who might be under one of these guardianships, more than likely their bond carrier is going to boot them. And once they're booted, they cannot sit again. They're out. And there's things that I'm learning as I go along here. There are things that you can do. And due process is the key to all of this. While many of the state statutes, we have a family in Iowa whose mother was taken by force, and she owned a considerable amount of agricultural property, three different properties to be exact. And they were trying, various individuals were trying to get this lady to sell to them, and she refused. So they basically kidnapped her, put her in isolated from her family. Her sons cannot speak to her, cannot see her, and haven't been able to for 4 years. And in the interim, the guardian has taken it upon themselves to sell two of her pieces of property to developers.
Now, this isn't uncommon at all either, is it?
No, it is not.
Because it seems to be a common, I've heard this time and time again across the country happening to various people.
Yes. And they're after, this is the last generation. I keep saying this over and over. This is the last generation with any real wealth in this country. The last generation that actually owns land, has assets, has saved their money, has lived frugally. And it is the greatest theft of wealth other than the bankrolling of these corrupt bankers in these bailouts. But it is the greatest theft of wealth from the middle and working classes that has ever happened. And I have to say, these people that are involved in this, the people that have been victimized by this, the families and spouses and parents, whatever, have fought just a tremendous war trying to make someone do something. They have gone, most recently, they were in Washington, D.C., and met with staffers, at least, demanding a listening session, and they got it. And I don't know that anything will come from it. There's been several appearances in front of the Committee on the Elderly and Aging, and testimony given there. And, of course, that committee is currently and has been in the past headed by Herb Kohl from Wisconsin. And I make no bones about the fact that that man is heading that committee means the minute everybody got up and left the room, he threw everything they said right in the trash and walked away, and that's why nothing's been done. He's notorious for this stuff. Now, the GAO has issued since 2000 a report on predatory guardianships in this country. And it is a growing problem. And yet, even with the Government Accountability Office saying, wait a minute, there's a massive theft going on here, and we have people being victimized, abused, mistreated, and possibly even murdered, and they still won't do anything. We've got Sarah Harvey out there in New York who has been fighting for 4 years to keep her husband alive.
Right. Yeah, I interviewed her too a while back.
Yes. And we had posted on my site and across the net, actually, letters to Governor Cuomo asking him to intervene. Why won't you help this woman and her husband? She has gone to state representatives. She has gone to anyone and everyone that would listen to her, trying to get her husband freed from this predatory guardianship, and they refuse to. They won't even let the man have a second opinion. Another doctor see him. They're fighting her over that. Then they assigned her husband an attorney who then made a motion in the court to divorce Sarah from her husband or divorce her husband from her, saying that's what the man wanted. He's been incommunicado for 4 years. How did he convey that? But supposedly, and this is what he told the court, that her husband wanted a divorce. And it is the most outrageous, sickening, disgusting thing. These probate courts are so corrupt. And you know, that's the thing too. A probate comes into effect only when a death certificate is produced. It's the only time that court can be active. So what they do is by granting this guardianship, they immediately declare that person dead in the law. And the guardian, what is going on in a lot of these cases, will take out very valuable life insurance policies on these people. And it's worth them to pay the premium because when they die, guess who collects that life insurance? The guardian. And but they're at the whole same time, they're taking property. They're taking personal possessions. This can be artwork, antiques, collections they had, anything they had. They can open safety deposit boxes. There is nothing that that person who becomes a victim of guardianship owns or has that belongs to him any longer. The guardian gets everything.
Well, you know, one of the things that, you know, because I've been in license as an insurance agent, and you know, the companies are supposed to do due diligence in checking out things that go around this issue. But it's starting to look a little more apparent these days that there are some of these companies are turning their they're not doing the due diligence as though they're part of the problem themselves. I'm not saying this is all companies at all, but I'm seeing some companies with some questionable practices, and often it's, you know, I would get inundated for trying to go to one particular popular item to sell, and I got to the point after 25 years I got a little bit leery on going into anything popular because it would be within a year or two. They would dump those policies, or they would. There would be things that you start wondering, what's going on here, and I hate to say that about the industry, but it seems to be there, and you know, and the agents have been taken out of that, any of the control along a lot of these lines, and I wish that I would see more that would start stepping up and questioning some of the things that don't appear to be on the up and up, and I really shouldn't. I feel bad even making that kind of claim, but I've run into it. And, you know, they try to lay blame on the agent, but some of these companies are the ones that you have to wonder about as well.
Well, they're the companies that are issuing what is referred to as dead peasant policies.
Right.
Now, our government, of course, does that routinely with our military. And they will take out life insurance policies on people going over to these wars. If they get killed, the government collects their life insurance. The family gets nothing. And this is a very common practice. And I'm finding it's also in this elder abuse issue that they're taking out what they refer to as dead peasant policies. Even if the person is released from guardianship, which is a rare occasion, they'll continue that life insurance policy that when the person does pass away, they collect it. The family never knows a policy was paid out. And the other thing, too, is what's called a dead pool. They are now assembling hedge funds based on what they call the dead pool. Now, all of this, I believe, is working in tandem. I think the reason it is expanding and exploding at the rate it is, and the reason our government on any level refuses to do anything about it, much less acknowledge that this is happening.
Well, often they're the recipients of it.
Yeah. Well, is this health care bill? Mm-hmm. Now, in that health care bill, Sarah Palin, who I have no admiration for at all, I think the woman's clueless, but brought up death panels. And in a sense, she was accurate because now a medical panel that has no medical background will tell your doctor what treatment is available to you based on your age, your risk factors, your health at the time, your possibility of recovery or a cure, and the years you may have left to work, and what you could contribute back, and is it worth it to them to invest in you getting you well? And one of the biggest drags on this healthcare system, they claim, is the elderly. And So I see these people being targeted, and at 61 years old, I'm concerned here, Mel. You know, I'm getting up there.
I'm there with you.
This is kind of making my hair stand up. Fortunately for me, I have nothing, and I'm keeping it that way. And but I see these people being targeted. When they come into these abuse situations, these guardianship abuse situations, and they become chattel property, they become wards. Now, let's take, for instance, let's say one of these people being held captive in one of these participating nursing homes or institutions bolts the gate and takes off, and they can't find them. They go to the police department and have a warrant issued, and do you know what it says?
Huh.
They're looking for escaped human property. Now, if you can't get a clue from that, it's not John Doe ran out the front door, go pick him up. It's escaped human property. And it sounds to me too much like the dog catcher. And but they're not even identified by name until further down in the warrant, if they even issue a warrant. It is, if you look at everything across the board, the Security and Prosperity Partnership that Bush started, were referred to in there as human capital, human investments, human expenses.
Human resources.
Mm-hmm. And if you look at any documents from Homeland Security, from the Department of Health and Human Services federally, probably even in your state, you are referred to the same way as an expense. You know, you're a commodity. You're to be bought, traded, and sold. And we have totally devalued our existence as human beings. And this whole predator class has risen up. And they're doing it with the blessings of government.
Well, you know, one of the things that we kind of covered last week on a program on a local level, but we ran across this thing, you know, where the animal control person can come in and take animals without, you know, due process. And my point was to some of the people in the group that were joining us, and one of them was a state representative, is, you know, if they can do that to our animals, they can do that to our land, they can do it to us. And that's the direction it seems to be headed, right?
Yes. And if you look at every law that's being passed, you're prohibited from judicial review. In other words, accessing the court. You're prohibited from exercising your rights. You have no rights unless they say you do. You don't have a case unless they say you have a case. And, you know, you have to apply to the secretary to find out if you have a case. And so I'm wondering if in this elder abuse thing, if we applied to the Secretary of Health and Human Services and asked why they have not intervened and stopped this, you know, if there would be any reaction. Now, on my own part, here about a month and a half, maybe 2 months ago, I assembled from documents I have documentation of horrendous abuse that I had firsthand knowledge of, in as much as I had the court documents and everything. I sent that to the DOJ with a long letter stating who I was, what my concern was, and here was my evidence. This is what's going on. And I highlighted these court rulings where people were given a ruling by the court that they couldn't report the abuse of their loved one to the police. They couldn't go to any law enforcement agency at all and make any reports of any kind of the abuse of that victim. And if they did so, they would be put in jail. Now, that's a violation of your rights.
Okay, now, how does this come about? I'm kind of lost a little bit on how this is applied.
Well, they simply do it. What happens in these probate courts, even if you get it to a higher court, we do have some hope in the Harvey case there, but normally what happens is the higher court will uphold the corruption of the lower court because everybody's making money. And let's take like the 11th District in Atlanta. William Windsor got two cases in front of the Supreme Court, and he asked the Supreme Court two questions. If they were going to do anything about the rampant corruption in the district court in Atlanta, to which they responded the corruption of the lower courts was not worthy of their attention. And the second question was, is our Constitution still in force? The Supreme Court heard his case and replied with a sealed ruling. They made one statement from it, which he made public, that these judges can violate the Constitution whenever the situation calls for it. Now, what situation would call for your constitutional rights to be violated? And when did this become acceptable? But this is what happens in these courts, the corruption of the judiciary. You're in more danger these days stepping into a courtroom than you are walking down the street and possibly being assaulted by a street criminal. These people in these courtrooms, you have no defense. You have no defense. The law is set up to be such a system of trickery and deception and manipulation. And it is whatever they say it is.
Twisting of words and terms.
Yes, yes.
And if you're not onto the game, you can just walk right into it with and give them your consent without your even knowing.
Without even knowing it. And that's the thing. And we have many instances where judges will scream at people, I don't want to hear about your rights. You don't have any rights. This is my courtroom. The law is what I say it is. Well, that's not supposed to happen.
Well, that, you know, that's one, I mean, you're falling into a whole nother bag of worms when you start even trying to figure out what these courts are and which and what type and where they think they're coming from. And, I mean, there's so many arguments and people out there studying this particular avenue that it just makes my head swim. But there's some people out there that are making some major sense out of what they're finding. It's just sad that most people have no clue as to what is going on out there. And how to deal with it in a logical way.
Right. Well, and that's very true. And there are many people attempting to learn the law and learn this system of pleadings and how to approach the court and to have to do this themselves when we have this whole bar system out there with these attorneys. And I stand by this statement. I've made it many times. If you're paying an attorney money, you might as well just go in your bathroom and throw that wad of cash down the toilet because you're going to get the same effect. And that's nothing. You're throwing it down a hole. I have too many instances in these cases where these attorneys have charged these families thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars and said, oh, yeah, I can get in there and I'll do this and I'll do that and don't you worry about a thing. And right before they step in the courtroom, the attorney meets them outside the courtroom door and says, I quit. I'm no longer your attorney. Find somebody else. Or they stand in the courtroom silent and they do nothing to defend their client or present a case for their client and then walk out and say, well, you lost. Too bad. And then we've got attorneys that people are just desperate to find attorneys to handle their cases who say, well, if you've got $10,000, I'll look at your case. And, of course, the answer always is, no, I can't represent you, but I've got your 10 grand. This goes on constantly. Then there's the constant deal making between the probate judge and the predatory guardian and what we call payrolling attorneys. And these are attorneys who enter into these cases for no other reason other than it's a lucrative business. And every time they file a motion into that court, they get to tap the estate of the victim. And that can be, you know, $5,000, $7,500. It can be $10,000. And it's all to benefit the ward.
Well, one of the things that gets discussed often on various programs is what the bar stands for. You're familiar with that?
Well, there's people that claim it means the British Accreditation Registry, and that does exist yet. Yes, but in actuality, in this country, the Bar Association simply represents the bar of standard or the standard bar that they must attain before they can go and get a license. And so you pass the bar, this standard, but they when they pass the bar, what they do is take an oath, there again, an oath to defend the Constitution of the United States and of the state they may be in. And many states are actually beginning to do away with the Bar Association because it's such a hindrance. And I had written an article recently, Mel, mm-hmm. and it was on these courtrooms being closed union shops. And we have judges who refuse to let anyone in their courtroom who is not a member of the Bar Association as that judge is. Okay, and so this precludes any pro se's, anyone who is working as a paralegal, anyone else from coming into that courtroom and presenting anything. They won't let them in. You have to show your card, your boys club card, to get in. And that's the only way you can get in front of these courts. And then they routinely, what I have seen is the pro se's assemble a far better, more meticulous, exhaustive case than any attorney ever thought of. And then we have states like Wisconsin, Florida, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, I believe, that their Supreme Court, state Supreme Courts came out in January of this year in tandem and said that you can't be a pro se in their courtroom. And not only that, if you are a pro se, no one can help you assemble research, documentation, write legal forms. No one can help you do anything. If they do, that's a felony. And this is the Supreme Court of the state saying this. This is to keep these people out who are coming into court kicking these attorneys' behinds. And they actually know the law, and they know the statute, and they know what their rights are. There's no way they're going to let these people in. So these state Supreme Courts are systematically making it, their lawmaking is what they're doing. And it's a direct violation of your Fourth Amendment rights.
Well, I can see where maybe why they're even doing it, because I've interviewed several people that have been doing this or trying to train people on how to do that on their own. And finding out that, you know, because you don't get a lot of answers from the professionals, because that oftentimes the professionals gag by their own associations to give legal advice that they should be able to give. You find that even in your medical profession. You find that in your insurance. You find that in just about any kind of organization, that one of the first things they do is tell them what they can't say. And
yes.
And oftentimes the very thing that they can't say is what needs to be said.
Yes. Which is why you can't say it. You know, and you see how that works. But it's all a system of deception and manipulation and trickery. And it's who's got the money, who's connected to who. And you just, as a common person, don't matter. This is all about status and prestige and enrichment, self-enrichment, and they just really don't care. Attorneys have a very bad name, and they've earned it. They've earned it. It's not like people were just picking on them. They've earned every bit of that reputation. And we've got a few attorneys out there that are trying very hard to make a difference, and I applaud them, but the thing is they'll run them out of the state. Now, there are instances in certain states where you can become what's called a private attorney, and that means you bypass the bar and you apply directly to the state for permission to practice law as a private attorney. And they really don't like those guys at all.
I can imagine.
And it's difficult for them to continue, you know, in their law practice, but they do it. And
Marty, let me just state that, you know, I've got Marty Oakley. She has a radio program called Truth Squad, and it's on Blog Talk Radio, correct?
And, yes.
And that you, what's your website now?
It's the PPJ Gazette. It's ppjg.gazette@wordpress.com.
Okay, and she covers a lot of different everyday issues that people are running into, and bringing on some good guests, and working with several co-hosts and hosts that do their own areas of expertise.
Yes,
and it's a pretty good radio program. So I recommend people checking it out.
Well, I tend to be, as maybe you've detected, Mel, a little bit mouthy. And
that's why I loved it.
I'm just way past the point of caring what anybody thinks. I've heard rumors now of FBI agents showing up at people's houses, CIA agents showing up at people's houses and questioning them about their views and what they're doing and what they're writing and what they're talking about. And come on down, boys, because I don't care. At this point, I believe if we don't stand up as a nation and protect the elderly and our families from these parasites that are running our government, we're all done for anyway.
Well,
what
ultimately,
have you got to lose?
I mean, our generation, if they aren't the ones to step up and do it, the next generation, they don't even have the memory to know the difference.
Well, and they have been trained so well. You know, it's like mm-hmm. I was talking about my granddaughters and what was going on in school. They are training these kids to be detached. If you look at all these children walking around with iPods and cell phones and Game Boys and this and that and something else, and these kids seldom ever look up.
Right.
And they have an even harder time when they're forced to communicate. And then they come home from school with their heads filled full of all of this garbage, this globalism. And one of the questions there, again, that one of my granddaughters was asked last year on a pop quiz was, and this is a loaded question, do you believe global citizenship will be possible in your lifetime? And I asked her, what was your response to that? She said, well, that's why I was calling you. She said, that question didn't sound right to me. And I said, who are you? And she said her name. And I said, and where do you live? She said, Georgia. I said, that's where you belong. What country do you live in? The United States. I said, that's the other place you belong. That's who you belong to. You are not a global citizen. You are a citizen of the state of Georgia. And I said, you put that down and tell them you don't want to be a global citizen. And so she did, and her teacher called me. All the way up here in Minnesota, and just railed at me. Why was I telling my granddaughter such horrendous things? And I said, if you ever tell my granddaughter anything like that again, that she should desire global citizenship, I said, I'll come down there and claw your eyes out. And I said, on another occasion, they told me they had discussed the Constitution for one whole hour. I said, a whole hour? She said, yes. And I said, and what'd you think of that? She said, well, they were wrong about a lot of things, Nanny, because we talk about that and discuss it and look into it when they're here. And she said, so I just told her that it was not irrelevant. It was a very important document. And so, again, the teacher calls. And please don't tell her these things because it interferes with what we're teaching her at school. I said, but you see, I don't want her learning what you teach because it's un-American.
Well, you know, our newspaper yesterday on the 4th of July actually published the Declaration of Independence, and I sat down and read through it, and I realized just about everything that these people were declaring independence from was going on today. I mean, it fit right into today, and I just wonder how many people, you know, have come to recognize that, you know, it's time to redeclare independence, you know? So
I think it's time for us as a nation. We've got to shut off the TVs, and we have got to get out in the streets. And I'm not advocating civil revolt as such, but it's time we took this government back from this band of predators and parasites and globalists. I don't know about anybody else, but what I see happening as a result of all of this is, like I say, the issue of elder abuse and this milling of these elderly people while they steal their assets, the use of children to test drugs and make money. When you see all of this going on, and in addition, losing 22 million jobs while corporations are allowed to offshore their business and avoid paying any U.S. taxes and get to bring their crappy products back into the country duty-free, I've got a problem with all of that. And then we've got the border in the South that's left wide open intentionally. This is per the agreement, the Security and Prosperity Agreement by Bush 2, the dolt, that this is why they won't secure the border, is because that calls for open borders and for the free movement of goods and people to benefit corporations. So, and this is where we become human assets. And, but you see all of these things going on, and what you see is a steady deconstructing, not only of the country as a whole, but of our society. We have been trained to think that the elderly are disposable, and that if they can't live on this meager amount they get from Social Security or something else, and if they don't have a lot of assets, well, that's just too bad. And so that makes them fair game. Now, what's going on in these nursing homes, many mental institutions, state institutions where they house orphan children, that kind of thing, they do horrendous things. These kids and these adults in these institutions have no rights, and you have to understand that. They have absolutely no rights. It's as if they are dead in the law. They cannot speak to the court. They cannot speak on their own behalf. And it's very difficult for someone else to be able to speak for them. And they use these people out in California. They are taking prisoners out there and testing implantable brain chips on them. And the company doing it said it was quite successful. There was one slight problem, that when they put these brain chips in them, they could control their behavior, and if they became violent, they could cue this thing up and they would sleep for 24 hours, and they were lethargic and easily managed. But there was just this one little hitch in it. They were bleeding from every orifice in their body. But they didn't see that as anything major. After all, they're prisoners. And
just like any medication on TV, sounds like it, you know, after you listen to the side effects of it, you're going, and you're selling this stuff?
Yo, give me a bucket of those, you know. And but they're doing the same thing to children. And we have a history, our government has a history of using children in orphanages. Canada, of course, had that big scandal
right.
in the 50s where they were doing horrendous things to orphan children, and many of them died. Our country is just as bad. When people get into these institutions, they test vaccines on them, and they don't have to tell you they did it. And even if you were to find direct evidence that they had done it, according to the DOD regulations, where they can test anything anytime they want and anybody they want, they don't have to ask anybody or admit to it or get your consent. And even if you find out that they did it, you can't do anything to them about it.
Yeah, they're kind of like you have no recourse against them.
No, and this is what I was saying, Mel. All of these laws that have been passed, particularly in the last 10 years, all carry this caveat. There's no judicial review. You can't access the courts. You have no right to complain. We can say we have a reason to believe. And these guardianship and conservatorship laws are now beginning to reflect that same thing. We, based simply on the fact that we think there's a problem, there's a problem. We don't have to have any evidence. We just said there was. And that's evidence enough. And you know, when people hear this, you know, and I can hear people out there thinking, oh yeah, right. It can happen to you. Don't tell anybody what you own. Don't tell anybody what you're worth, what your house is worth, what you may have in investments, what you may have socked away. Don't tell anybody anything, because the wrong person might hear it. And the next time you get a cold and go to the doctor, you could end up being shipped off somewhere, because there'll be somebody there waiting for you. And that's the other thing in this too. This system that's going on, we have people going into the hospital. Maybe they fell and broke a hip. You know, maybe they got pneumonia, whatever. They go to the hospital and their name is already in the system and they're flagged. And there is a person at that hospital. Sometimes it's a head nurse. Sometimes it's a social worker that's sent in to see how you're doing. And your name is run in the system, and if you're flagged that, you know, you own X amount, you have this and that, you have your own resources, they've got a predatory guardian on speed dial. I'm serious.
No,
I'm serious.
I believe it.
And they call them, and it'll be the same nurse or the same social worker, the same predatory guardian every time.
Well, I've often heard that there's kind of a bounty on some of these types of situations, like with child protective services and the like. Have you heard that?
What do you mean a bounty?
I mean that these people get a fee for finding these candidates.
Yes, there you go. And we start the money mill rolling. Yes, and this is why children are snatched up, and this is why we have people sitting in these institutions. Some of the people that testified in D.C. over the 14th and 15th, from what I understand, are people who have been put under guardianships and their estate is being robbed. And they were asked point blank, what are you doing under a guardianship? And there's no answer. The only answer is I had a little wealth. I owned some property. You know, I had liquid assets and somebody else wanted them. That's the answer.
Well, and this is, again, in the instance when I was doing the interview last week with the animal control, you know, it's so easy to send these people in and cost these people that have the dime dropped on them and cost them thousands and thousands of dollars, even if they get the decision in the court in their favor. It isn't uncommon for them to, you know, still destroy the animals or sell them or and not see the money. And so there's so many miscarriages going on out there, and there's just little recourse for those of us that are out there trying to, you know, sound the whistle here and say, you know, there's some things going on. People need to be sitting in these courtrooms and observing. If you go to your city councils and you sit in there and observe, the behavior becomes different. And they don't have to be doing anything wrong. It's just the way it works. Human behavior. If they know they're being watched, they're going to be a little bit different. Doesn't mean that it's, you know, the corruption's going to go away, but I'll tell you, they'll start changing some of the way they do things. And sitting in a courtroom and watching some of the things going on and having a little bit of understanding of what the, you know, should be going on there, you might be surprised what you see.
Well, that's very true. And, you know, it's something else that I do know for a fact. There is not a courtroom in this country that operates without a video on it. If that court's in operation, there's a video camera on it. And there is video evidence of what transpired in that courtroom. And I have several people who have gone and demanded copies of that video, of that recording of the day's proceedings, because the judge was so blatantly corrupt, because the attorneys were so obviously deficient. And they are told, oh, there is no such thing. We can't afford that. There is one running in every courtroom. And like I've told people, if you watch TV and you like that, there's some stupid show on TV and they show what happens in courtrooms, you know, when people go berserk. Where do you think that comes from? That's from those videos running. And they do this in every courtroom. Now, the other thing they're doing is refusing to have a court reporter there saying the court can't afford it. And you're paying for it. Why can't they afford it? They can charge you for everything else. So they won't have one. So people have taken to hiring their own and bringing them in. The other thing is a digital audio of what went on in that courtroom. But if you get one, if you're able to get a copy of that digital audio recording, it will come with a statement that says it cannot be used as evidence. They don't guarantee the accuracy of it. They're just simply giving it to you because you asked for it. And it'll cost you a couple $100s minimally to get it. And this obviously means nothing, so why are we doing that? But and there again is evidence. And so them making a statement to the effect that this is not evidence, it can't be used as evidence. If it's a recording of what went on in that courtroom and it hasn't been tampered or altered, yes, it is evidence.
Okay, let me go ahead and say this is KHENLP 106.9 Salida, and my guest this evening is Marty Oakley, and she does a program called Truth Squad on Blog Talk Radio. And then she also has her own website. And I got to write it down because I'm not, I keep forgetting how to pronouncing it.
Well, it's the Proud Political Junkies Gazette, the PPJ Gazette. And it's ppjg.wordpress.com. And, but like I say, there's all this crap that goes on in these courtrooms. And now people have reported not only the abuse of the elderly and their spouses and whatever to the state attorney generals, to the local district attorney, to the police department. Then they're sent to the Health and Human Services Department, who tells them to go back to the police department, which tells them to go to the district attorney, and it goes around and around and around, and nobody is responsible. And then you go higher up than that, and you go to the state's attorney general, who tells you to contact your congressman, who tells you to contact your senator, who tells you to go to your police department, and we start all over again. Nobody's responsible. The Department of Justice, now you would think that was a legal entity, that it dealt with the law, would you not? But according to them, these issues are legal issues, and you need to hire an attorney. And you see how this works. I mean, it's just a big circle jerk. they just send these people on these merry-go-rounds with no end in sight. And, you know, that's another part of this that really bothers me. The use of law enforcement to physically break into an elderly person's home and take them from their home under force, and to help set this thing in motion. I don't understand how that happens. But one thing I have noticed over the last year is there's not a law enforcement car in the country that any longer says to protect and serve. And talking to one of the local sheriff's deputies in my area, I noted that his car no longer said to protect and serve. It just simply says sheriff in great big giant threatening letters. And I said, what happened to protect and serve? And he said, well, that's not our mandate anymore. And I said, what do you mean? And he said, well, now that we're under Homeland Security, he said, we operate under the mandate of our job is not to protect you. We're under no obligation to protect you in any situation. That's not our job.
Then why are you voting for him?
Yeah. And, well, that's the sheriff. The sheriff is who you vote for, but all those deputies, uh-huh, those aren't voted for. They're hired, therefore they're under Homeland Security. I said, what exactly is your mandate? What's your job now if you're not here to protect the public? He said, oh, he said, our job is to protect the government from you. I said, well,
they're actually
that.
Telling him that, huh?
Yeah, yeah. And he said, you know, with all the terrorism and everything, and now we've got domestic terrorists. I said, yeah, and they're all wearing badges. And so he didn't like that, but, you know, I was in such a mood. But he just looked at me, and I said, I couldn't help but note, I said, on your badge there, you got the Homeland Security insignia. I said, why are we having to pay you if you're working for them? Well, we get funding from them. I said, wasn't that just damn handy? I said, I wonder where they get that money from. I said, oh, yeah, that's the taxpayers, isn't it? The people you're supposed to protect and serve. They have no obligation to protect you at any time, except and unless they take you into custody and arrest you. And then it's only limited. There, if you fall down and break your neck and both your eyes get blacked and your teeth get knocked out, because you fell on the floor accidentally, that's not their fault.
So in other words, what you're telling us then is that many of these departments now, being that they're harmonized into this one system of Homeland Security, then it's taken the local jurisdiction out of locals' hands, right?
Yes, exactly. All your law enforcement across the country is under Homeland Security, with the exception of your sheriff. And we have sheriffs like Tony DeMeo, Sheriff Arpaio, others that absolutely hold the line. And they're hired by the people, and they believe in the Constitution, and they hold the line. But they're few and far between. what we have seen is the empowerment of law enforcement to the point where them riding by in the car, you're liable to drown in a pool of testosterone. They're so badge heavy and so empowered, they can do virtually anything now. They can break any law. The Supreme Court says they can lie to you, they can beat you, they can tase you, they can do whatever they have to do. And even if it comes out that you have done nothing wrong, it's your own fault for angering them.
Wow.
And yes. And so we see this happening. It's also happening up in Canada. And but they have become a threat and a menace to our communities. And anyone who's on the force who says, wait a minute, that's not what I was hired for. You know, I wanted to be a police officer because I wanted to serve my community, or, you know, blah, blah, blah. Well, they just somehow lose their job. They're run out. The great blue wall goes up and they're gone. We now have cities assembling military equipment. Miami's one, New York City, Los Angeles. They're buying tanks with ADS denial systems on them. This is a big microwave system they tested out on Iraqis. And they're buying sonic sound weapons, and they are buying drones for spying. Our law enforcement is becoming and has become militarized.
Right.
And our military is soon going to be totally under the control of the UN. And I think, like I say, we're standing on a precipice. And something is going to push us over, and when it does, it's going to be a sad day in this country, because there is nothing these people won't do to quell the riot. And I do believe that's coming. I think people are so fed up with the corruption on absolutely every level. I think people are so fed up and they're scared. But the point is going to come, Mel, where they're going to quit being scared and they're going to get pissed. And when they do, it's going to be an ugly day.
Right. Now, are you familiar with Bernadine Smith and the Second Amendment Committee?
No, I'm not.
Oh, okay. Well, I've been in contact with this lady, and she sent me volumes of documents going back to the 30s that show what's going on today. It has been going on a long time, and it's been a very concerted process to bring us to this point in time. And that there's plenty of documentation out there to back that up, and that many of the, again, you had brought up earlier about the language, the way that they have taken terminology and used it as a warm and fuzzy, when in reality it's been used as a means to socially engineer us for an agenda. And one of them being Agenda 21. But when I lifted a book up in a meeting in my area, most of the people had no clue what it was, and yet they were all acting as everything they were doing came under that book's designs.
Yes, well, and this has been going on a long time. The treatment of our foster children, of our elderly, of our disabled, actually goes back to the late 1800s and the American Eugenics Society. Now, they are the group, and it's still active today. It's now the Manhattan Institute. But the Eugenics Society believed that there were inferior races that should be eradicated or prevented from procreating, and they've been pretty successful in that. But they also believed, and they were the blueprint used by Hitler in Nazi Germany, by Himmler, Goering, and all of them. It was the blueprint used for Nazism. And what they did when they came into a community is the first thing they did was they got rid of all the old people, and then they got rid of all the disabled people, and then they got rid of all the gay people, and anybody who had any kind of an infirmity or anything was called out, killed, and buried. And they had gangs of troops that went town to town doing exactly this. And there was a recent documentary on History Channel, and it was from one village there in the Ukraine, and they talked about having killed so many people in one day, and they had dug a massive pit, and these people were all in this pit, assumed to be dead, but the townspeople said that the ground moved for 2 days because there were still live people under all that dirt.
Ooh.
But this is, you see this, we're doing it in a much, like in a soft kill fashion now. We load our kids up with these vaccines and wonder why now one out of 50 has autism, neurological impairments and damage, seizures, all sorts of infirmities. They were fine before they got the vaccine. Now they're not, but it's not the manufacturer's fault. And it could just be a design flaw. You don't know. And so, but we see the kids tested on it. All of this stuff that comes out, and you look at, you brought up about these horrendous drugs. Most of them are not fit for human consumption. And when they openly tell you, don't use it on the elderly, this can cause heart attacks, strokes, blood clots, brain bleeds, vomiting, dizziness, diarrhea, seizures, paralysis. Well, yeah, I'll take that prescription because it'll get rid of my cold. And the gullibility of people just, they're telling you point blank, this crap is poison. It's going to do you more harm than good.
Well, you know, when you're, what we're really talking about is a humongous brainwashing that has been going on, mind control, you name it, and it's been carried out in such ingenious fashion. Some of it, you know, overtly, some of it very covertly. But in the meantime, we're not asking the questions, and we're afraid to ask the questions. And once you start, you don't have to be right in your questions. Just start asking them. You'd be amazed what starts coming out when you start asking questions and showing that you have a mind of your own.
Well, the one thing they don't want you to have is a mind of your own. And I think one of the reasons, like with this elder abuse thing, that it does go under the radar, that nobody does report it. I mean, I try to. I know several other people have tried to, and I'm going to continue doing so. But is most people don't want to be bothered, and most people have the attitude, well, it isn't happening to me, so it must not be happening. You know, we have become and trained to become so detached from one another. And when these events happen, when there becomes this systematic using and abuse of children and of the elderly, you see these are the most vulnerable in society and the least likely to have any defense, any way of fighting back.
Well,
so they're going after them first.
I wish I could remember the quote where it came from. But ultimately, you know, when we're not taking care of the vulnerable of the society, it isn't long before we're not taking care of ourselves. I mean, because it only goes to show that these people. I mean, we've come to believe that our lifespan is 60 to 80 years old. We should be living to 120. Where did that change? I mean, there's a lot of people that have made it to 100 years old, and we should be doing it in good health. But somewhere along the line, we've been come to believe that we couldn't do this. And I beg to differ. That there's plenty of information out there to show that without a lot of life extension, if we were living and weren't fed all these toxins and poisons and exposed to them, we'd probably be living a much better, healthier life if we just had decent food and water.
That's exactly right. And our food supply is so contaminated with GMO, with herbicides, pesticides, toxins of all kinds. If you go into a hardware store, you know, some big box store, and you buy chemicals, let's say, to use on your yard, and it says the active ingredients comprise 9.6% of this product. That's all they have to list is that active ingredients or whatever those active ingredients are. But it's the inactive ingredients that they don't tell you, that other 94%+. Those are the killers, and those can be funguses that have been mutated, bacterium, viruses, toxic chemicals, caustics, solvents. It can be antifreeze. It can be anything. And people buy it and say it, you know, and then it's got the FDA seal of approval, safe is if used as directed. Well, did it come with a hazmat suit? Because that's what you should be wearing. Anytime you apply any of these toxic chemicals or you use them in your home, it's not that active ingredient you need to worry about. It's what they didn't list. And the other side of that is they don't have to list them. The FDA said they don't have to list them. And even if you get sick and green warts start sprouting out of the tops of your hands and you know it, that came about only because you used that product and you go back to the company and say, what was in this that caused these green warts on my hands? They don't have to tell you. And in fact, you can't even sue them and get the information. That's a trade secret. They don't have to tell you that. But we're just being poisoned steadily. They just found, in the umbilical cords of babies, more than 208 chemicals, pesticides, herbicides, toxins of all kinds in the umbilical cords. We are being that exposed to toxins of all kinds at such a massive level that our water isn't safe to drink. I just can't get across to people that when you take what they've done to the food supply, when you take the contamination of our water, here in the Midwest, our waterways are all contaminated with atrazine. It's used on the fields. It's deadly to human beings and livestock. And they finally figured out that it was atrazine when cattle started dropping over dead and pigs and flocks of geese and everything else. They decided they maybe ought to test the waterways. And sure enough, it's high levels of atrazine in it, toxic levels. But we're exposed to this on every level. And then you compound that with this constant pushing of vaccines and medications. And it's lucky any of us live to be 30 years old.
I'm trying to remember if I sent you that article that had to do with the sage. Is it the sage grouse?
Oh.
Every day I open
See,
up these.
See, you are so far behind. It's not the sage grouse anymore, Mel. They're trying to save the sagebrush. Because the sage grouse are so damn overpopulated that, yeah. I'm telling you, I can't stand it. I can't.
Every day, it's I swear they put some of these things out in the media just because they can do it. Then some yeah. of the more absurd it can be, the more, you know, and just to see if people react or not. And yeah. and then if they. Then periodically you find out that they, you know, they're really doing what, you know, you thought was the most absurd thing you ever heard.
Yeah. Well, I had written an article recently, because sometimes things strike me as so ludicrous and ridiculous that I can't stand it. And so the article was titled, "It Isn't You Causing Global Warming, It's Cow Farts." And somehow, somewhere, some idiot in a green field far, far away decided to attach a pink plastic bag to the back of a cow and collect all the farts from a 24-hour period. And something happened in this fool's head. And he said, aha, there are 1.5 billion cows in the world, and if they're all expelling this much gas every day, that is more than all the cars, trains, and other causes of methane combined. Now, I don't know what idiot did this. I don't care. I just can't believe this. It's so insane. It's so ridiculous. But see, this global warming thing, it was global warming till the ClimateGate memos came out, and it was shown to all be a fraud. And of course we've got cap and trade that they couldn't pass, so they just handed it over to the EPA to implement by regulation. It's a wonderful revenue generator. You don't have to reduce your emissions, you just have to pay for the privilege of doing it. And they tried to blame us. I mean, the comet people out there, well, our carbon footprints. I'd like to put a footprint somewhere. I swear I would. That didn't wash. And so the next thing they came up with was cow farts. And I'm telling you, when I saw this, it was one of those times you didn't know whether to get up and start banging your head in the wall and tearing your hair out or just shutting off the computer and walking away and saying, that's it, I'm not doing anything else. It just becomes more ridiculous by the day.
I don't know about you, but I was listening to a radio program this morning where they were talking about handing out sheets of toilet paper, having hired people to do that in some New York bathrooms. I mean, just...
Oh, please. Oh, help. Were people taking too much? I mean, what was that?
I really think it's gotten to the point that they're hiring people to think of the most absurd ways to irritate the public and then implement it. I really do. I mean, it's gotten to the point where you go, what are they going to think of next? And they do. You know? And it's really sad because ultimately it's gotten to the point, you know, that it's about controlling each and every one of us by our every, you know, move and mannerism, and to do it on a peer level that is, you know, sad, because ultimately, you know, if this country was founded on independence, why are we so dependent? Why do we keep going in that direction?
Well, you know, I hear people really knock people that are on welfare. And you're looking at a system that, an economic system that is predicated upon keeping a certain percentage of the population in poverty. Now, that serves several purposes. It gives the rest of the population somebody to point their finger at and say, if it wasn't for you... And the other thing it does is it keeps X number of people out of the job market. And so, you know, it's all worked out. They have a formula that they use for this, and X number of people have to stay in poverty. They can never get out. And that's why you see the welfare program set up where it's not enough actually to live on, but if you try to go and get a job to help supplement that, you lose everything. So you either stay in poverty on welfare, or you go into even worse poverty by trying to work a minimum wage job. Now, a good system would be, we'll help you out, you go ahead and work and contribute back into the system. And even if you can't get to this level, you know, where you can live decently, and I don't even mean comfortably, but decently, if you can get to that level, then we'll, you know, cut you loose. If you can't, we'll continue to help you, but you continue working. But see, they won't do that. Social Security is the same thing. If you're on general Social Security, regular Social Security, I guess you can earn now up to $12,000 a year. Whoopee. And, but if you're like on disability, you can't earn anything. And I know disabled people who would just welcome the chance to work a part-time job. They maybe can't work full-time anymore, for whatever reasons, but they would, the opportunity to get out of the house, to contribute, to interact with other people, to earn some money, to feel at least somewhat independent, would be welcomed. But see, they're not allowed to. If you earn any money, you're off.
You know, and when you're talking about that sort of thing, because you're talking about some social engineering programs that seem to be quietly implemented. One of them that I've noticed and that I along the way is, you know, there was a time period where you know, the such a discrepancy in the wage scale that some, you know, a lot of people had to have two or three jobs. And then you found down the road that there was a management system that, I mean, and it's existed ever since I've been in the workforce. There were those that treated the employees well, and then there were those that out there that treated them and tried to instigate problems among their employees, and it was a management style, and I've observed that. And then so ultimately you see when they, some of these guys have three jobs, then they're forced to have to make a choice. And they purposely make it as hard as they can for them to have three jobs as opposed to one. And so have you observed what I'm talking about?
Yes, yes. And that's the idea that people, a good job should pay a livable wage. And I do believe in minimum wage. And I believe in it because left to their own devices, we'd all be living in squalor, because these companies would not pay anything. The competitiveness they claim in the job market that would result in minimum wage would just absolutely go by the wayside. And this is the reason they passed minimum wage to begin with, is that left to their own devices, these companies didn't. And I hear people rail about the unions, and people seem to forget that if it wasn't for the unions, wouldn't none of us be making any money worth a crap. It was the unions who went up against the trade associations who were rigging the job markets. This started out in New York, of course, back in the 20s. And what they were doing is they had all these textile mills and other kinds of manufacturing. Now, you could work in one of them, but if they were working you 20 hours a day for a quarter a day, and you thought you were going to quit them and go over to Company X that did the same thing and get a better deal, no, you weren't, because they were all working together to make sure you were 20 hours a day and got a quarter. And this is what started the movie The Gangs of New York, is what that's all based on. But that was the beginning of the unions. And unions formed in response to trade associations. The trade associations are still there, but a bigger entity formed from that, and that is the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, which, in my opinion, is one of the most corrupt anti-American organizations on this soil. It's second only maybe to the CFR and a few others, but these people don't want a minimum wage. And the reason these corporations jump ship and run over to another country is because they will do over there what they would like to do here, but because of the law can't, and that is pay slave labor wages, work you to damn death, and too bad if you drop over dead on the job or get hurt.
Isn't that what our prison system's the equivalent of? Is the slave wages that are taking place in some of these other countries?
Yes, yes.
They're just government-sanctioned.
People can holler about the unions, but it's the unions that have stood between U.S. workers and unscrupulous business owners. Because, like I say, if these people had their way, I mean, look at what Wall Street did. It bankrupted the whole country and then turned around, gave us the finger, and we had to bail them out.
Time more than once.
Yeah, this is just the way it goes. They don't care about anybody out here. It's profit, 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 profit. And while I do not object to anybody profiting from their business, and I don't care who gets rich, and I don't care who is rich, good for you. But you don't have to kill me and mine to do it. And that's just the way I feel about it. I know they've tried everything to castigate these unions, to cast them in a negative light. No, this union is so big and it's so powerful and it contributed this much money to candidates, which is nothing compared to what non-union corporations contributed to that same candidate.
Do you talk on unions often?
Not a whole lot. Okay. I just mostly because I've been preoccupied with so many other things. And,
not that there's many left.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Things just pop in my head, Mel, and I just roll with it. But yeah, it's just like I say, I'm a history buff for one thing. I did a lot of work on the Eugenics Society, where that had gone, who that was, who in their right mind would even think such a thing.
Can you get into that a little bit?
Well, the Eugenics Society, like I say, they formed initially in the late 1800s, and their plan was the sterilization of or killing off of various ethnic groups. They are the ones who initially came out with the theory that black people were mud people. They were a sub-race, subhuman race, and there was no reason why they shouldn't be slaves and used like work animals, because basically that's all they were. And we had sterilization laws in place, the last state to do away with mandatory sterilization, forced sterilization, was South Carolina, and that was in 1984. And you could get sterilized for reasons like somebody said you were promiscuous and they didn't need any evidence, you got sterilized. Or someone, like say there was a family, they had one mentally retarded child, they sterilized the whole family because they didn't want that family messing up the gene pool. And their contention was one generation of idiots is enough. There's something wrong with your family or you wouldn't have this kid. And so we're going to sterilize the whole bunch. They did this to divorced women. They did this to poor women. Most recently that I know of, it was in the 1990s. The Health and Human Services showed up out on the reservations out in North Dakota. And before somebody figured out what they were doing, they...
Did I lose you?
And vaccines and blah, blah, blah. And they sterilized 44% of the women before somebody caught on to what they were doing. And so, I mean, it goes on constantly. Many of these vaccines are coming out with have ethnic markers in them to target certain specific portions of the population of different ethnicities. And it's all a big test run, you know. But eugenics, it takes, I believe, a sociopath to even think about eugenics as a reality. Bill Gates is a eugenicist. Ted Turner is a eugenicist. They believe in depopulation, and there are sub-races and lower classes of people that shouldn't be here using up all the good stuff. And, you know, we're eating their food and breathing their air, drinking their water. And, but this came on, and then it came up into the 1950s. And this was at the time in 1954, John W. Merck, head of Merck Pharmaceuticals, was named special grand poobah of the Office of Special Viruses, and under public law, charged by Congress with creating a virus for which the human body had no known defense, immune response, and voila, we got AIDS. And, but he was charged, this is under, like I say, it was a matter of public law, I have all the documents on that. But the eugenics society.
But there are more doctors and whatever involved in that process, though, was there not?
Oh, yes.
I mean, that wasn't just this man's.
No, he just headed up that office.
Okay.
He headed up the program and directed it. But oh yeah, there were many people involved in that. Many, many. And many of them belonged to this eugenics society. Well, their image had become so tarnished because of what they were about and what they were promoting that they remade their image, gave themselves a new name, became a quasi-government agency, and became the Manhattan Institute. And it's just magic how things happen out there. And but they became the Manhattan Institute, and they get tons and tons of federal funding. They do all sorts of weird things, and basically they report to the federal government. We don't know half of what they do. And but that is the old American Eugenics Society. But there is this whole faction in our government and in the upper classes that believe the rest of us should not be here. We're wasting space. We're just using up things that belong to them.
You know, one of the things that blew me away is when how many people I did my own little test, walking out and asking how many people thought that this planet was overpopulated, and I was just, you know, kind of aghast at how many people really believe that, and then asking where they're, you know, what they base that information off of, and it's just like it's just a mind control technique. I don't know. I mean, something that's put out in the air and people just, you know, take it in. I mean, it's kind of like when I first started asking questions about 9/11. I mean, the very thing that came out of everybody's mouth was, you're a conspiracy theorist. And I'm going, where did this come from? You know, I can't ask a question.
Well, do you know, you've brought up something good, and some other show hosts and I were talking about this recently. Even 3-4 years ago, if you wrote anything contrary to the conspiracy theory put out by the government, and that was the grandest conspiracy theory of all, but if you wrote anything, you were a conspiracy theorist. And I finally put a big thing up on my blog one day that said, conspiracy is a theory only if you have no evidence. Here's the evidence. And you know, yeah, I've never heard another word. Nobody has ever called me a fringe lunatic. Well, they call me some other names, Mel, but a conspiracy theorist. You know, they haven't called me that. Of course, I don't tolerate that stuff on my site anyway. But that has kind of fallen off because too much evidence has come forward. Too much evidence has been laid in front of the public that they can't call us conspiracy theorists anymore. When I write, when my authors on my site write, when other people that whose work I will publish write, it's all documented and resourced, and nothing is more gratifying than beating these jerks to death with their own stuff. And so I love to – well, it just knocks down all the arguments. When we document and resource, we go right to their homepage, and we pull it right off of their – right out of their documents, right out of their memos, right out of their piece of legislation, out of their statements of intent, their memorandums of understanding. It knocks down the argument. Now tell me I'm a conspiracy theorist. If you think there's a problem here, go back to these people who wrote this crap.
Well, you know,
there's your problem.
When you start reading some of their books I wish I could think of the term I want for it, but philosophies that they've developed and had, you know, I think they, you know, hire a lot of different authors when they decide they want to get this out into the public purview, and all of a sudden you start seeing tons of revisionist history or tons of things, you know, coming out of different avenues that support the sustainability or the green or whatever it is that has become popular throughout history. You start checking back and you start finding groups that seem to be behind a lot of this. Right now you see a lot of think tanks that start, they're out there in the media all the time, and you're wondering, you know, why is this guy spending all this time writing this stuff? He's such an accomplished person, and yet he's spending all his time trying to pass off information that if you start digging very far, you're going to start finding out there's nothing there but propaganda. Do you have any?
Well, I agree with you. You see these people show up, and mostly it's money. Just like when it says, you know, government studies show, that means we paid somebody the money to deliver the result we wanted. ClimateGate was an excellent example. Government scientists were paid a tremendous fee to fudge the data, skew the results, and tell this tale on global warming. And they all took the money and ran. And you see this happen over and over, and I think there are other things at work there, but I'm not sure about them, so I really don't want to say anything about them. You see this, you talked about people accepting the term depopulation. It's because what they do is soft kill conditioning. When they want you to believe something, they start bringing it out and saying it over and over and over and over until it becomes part of your own thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And then you accept it.
It becomes part of the rhetoric, I guess.
Yes.
And it starts changing the dictionaries, terminology,
yes,
and definitions of things.
One of the things I do, Mel, among other many strange and weird things, is I collect old dictionaries. And you would be amazed. I have one from back in 1922. At the difference in the meanings of words between then and now. And just even in a 5-year span, if you pay any attention to your dictionary at all, you see a massive change in the meaning of words, new words inserted. Oh, another one is like Black's Law. I have several editions of Black's Law. And if you go through that, the definition of legal terms is being steadily construed to mean something other than what it should mean. It did mean, it always meant. And this is done, see, it's done systematically, and it's done surreptitiously, and you're eased into it. And by the time you realize, wait a minute, this is, I'm sure this meant something else. The evidence of the something else has been eradicated, unless, of course, you're like me and you hoard law books. And so this is how it happens. People begin to question themselves. Well, I'm sure I read this, or, you know, I thought this meant that, but this says this. So I must have been wrong.
That's what really kind of concerns me over those crazy little pad book books.
They can have all them they want. I'm keeping my hardbound. What people don't understand about those is, yeah, that's real convenient. You can carry around. You can read a book at the bus stop. Oh, how handy. Like, I couldn't do that before. But if the power goes out or they shut down the net, what do you got?
They may as well burn the libraries.
Yeah. And, well, and see, we've got that happening, too, in Texas, Maryland, California, Ohio, and several places in Ohio. Your public library generally had a law section. And they are hauling all those books to the dump, closing that section down and putting in a kiosk. And you can only access the information in that kiosk if you have an identification number. And the only way you can get an identification number is if you are an attorney or a criminal. Now, what did that do to your right to access the law? And now there's talk about, in many county courthouses where they have a law library, of closing that to the public, because that should be for professionals only. They don't want you accessing the law. Knowledge is power.
Well, one of the things I ran across when I was going through the revised statutes at some point, I was finding a lot of the terminology in there. It said it was being harmonized. And I kept looking for what it was being harmonized to. It didn't state. Now, and I never got the answer. I got distracted in some other direction from that point. But I'm wondering, and harmonization is such a nice terminology used.
That sounds sweet. Yes.
Yeah, I think I've heard that in some of the UN type of...
We have harmonization agreements with the European Union, World Trade Organization, Codex Alimentarius, with the British Isles. We have harmonization, the Transatlantic Treaty. Oh, that was a nice one. Transatlantic Agreement. And this is a system of harmonization. So we have all the same laws. We have all the same systems in place. We're all doing the same thing. And quite conveniently, it is an across-the-board reductions of barriers and standards to accommodate the least efficient and sanitary corporate production. This is basically what it's about. It's to erase barriers, laws, sovereignty, anything that would preclude a corporation coming in from into your area and basically taking a dump in your waterways. And because if you do that, if you try to stop them from do that, see, they can sue you now. And but that's what harmonization is all about. It's making us all the same, so that we are no longer a sovereign nation. We are no longer self-determined. We are no longer governed by the Constitution and our own sovereign laws. We are governed by global laws and standards.
And this is being done down to our local levels, but they're being done in such innocuous means, like you're doing your your little regions and your council of governments, which is breaking the traditional boundaries into new ones, which would in its own rights be totally okay unless you knew the bigger picture. And most people have no clue what that bigger picture is unless they've been studying the bigger picture. And this is, again, why it's so valuable to have people like, again, I brought up Bernadine Smith. I mean, she's been at this many years acquiring her documents. She's quite prodigious in sending out information. And you get a packet from her and it's 4 inches thick.
Oh, wow. Oh, my kind of gal. Yeah, it's just, well, and that's the thing, and you talk about it, you know, they're implementing it on the local level. You have these international property codes that they're installing all over the country. In this small town where I live, here about 3 or 4 years ago, they decided all of a sudden, for reasons unknown, that they needed to repave every street and redo the entire water system and blah, 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 and it was going to cost $9 million. And so I went to these town hall meetings, and I said, you know, if you wait a couple of years, this economy is going to bottom out, and you can get this done for $2 million. But, of course, I was a woman and a foreigner. I'm not from here, so I'm a perpetual foreigner. And so I don't know anything. Well, of course, it's exactly the way it went. But at one of these meetings, they were talking about, oh, and they had this new city code, and you could not, if you went to get a water softener installed in your house, you had to get a permit. And I jumped up, of course, out of my chair and said, what the hell are you talking about? And, well, you have to get it. That's our new code. I said, so you adopted the International Property Code. When did you hold the meeting and take the vote on this? You were supposed to hold a public meeting. Of course, everybody glared at me like I just sprung horns. And, they just didn't, and hemmed and hawed. And this lady goes, well, what's wrong with that? And I said, you're going to have to get a permit to get a water. I think Erkin knows more about putting a water softener in than some idiot passing you out a permit. And you're going to pay for the permit. Then you're going to pay for an inspector twice, one to come before it's put in, one to come after it's put in. Guess who's going to foot the bill for all of that? You are. And for what reason? Because it's a revenue raiser. And it's part of the International Property Code. And I said, now you can't even put a piece of fence up in your yard. I said, you can't do anything. I had put a deck on this house I live in here about 10 years ago. I built it myself. And I built it out of scrap lumber. And the whole thing cost me $210. And it's quite lovely, I must say. And it's still standing out there and level, and nothing's fallen off it or anything. But it's not attached to the house. It's butted up to the house, but not attached to it. The assessor comes around here a couple years ago after the International Property Code was installed, and he said, I can't find any record of you buying a permit, he said, to let you build that deck. And I said, didn't have to have one. It costs less than $1,200. And I said, and it is not attached to the house. It's freestanding. And he said, oh, no, you have to have a permit. He said, we're going to make you take that down. I said, well, then I'm going to sue you. And I said, the first person that shows up here trying to take my deck down, we're going to go to war. But they came up several times. And, well, just get the permit and we'll just put it on the books. Like, I said, no, I refuse. Won't do it. And I said, I met the guidelines you had. But now under this new property code, even if it's freestanding, I have to get a permit. I have to get a permit. I can't put
in. So they're going to retroact a lot of this too?
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. I can't put any lights up outside. I can't change the windows in my house. I can't hang a new door. I can't do anything unless I get a permit.
And it doesn't matter how stupid some of their ideas, like those dumb light bulbs they've come out with.
Oh, my God. Yeah, and the big kicker on that is, you know, oh, they're green. They're going to say they're full of mercury. Our XL
green
Energy
mercury.
Here
green
has
mercury.
Said that, yes, they will dispose of the first 10 free of charge. And after that, I called them and I said, after 10 bulbs, then what? Oh, well, there'll be a charge for that. How much? Well, it'll be about $5 a bulb. I said, that's what the damn bulb costs. And I'm going to pay you another $5 to get rid of it? I don't think so. So I ordered a case of incandescent bulbs, and I'll just use them till they run out and get a candle. I don't know. It just becomes more insane by the day. And
I'm not against being green. I am not against being environmental. If it means that we're really doing it and not being, you know, our chain yanked, start following the money, you start finding out there's certain people funding a lot of this, and the person that's funding oftentimes has no more green in them than green for them means green money.
Well, and that's the thing now. Here's these people like Al Gore. I love Al Gore just simply because he's such an idiot. Here he's talking about carbon footprints and how much energy you're using and we've got to conserve and blah. And here this man lives in a $2 million house with six cars and I don't know how much fuel he's using. He put up some solar panels to try and ease his usage. I didn't see him shut his hot tub off. These people stand up there and they pass out these edicts about all this stuff, but they don't do it themselves. That's just for you commoners.
And,
just
and
for the, little people.
And I can't tell you how often I've run across situations where I've followed people that have really done some good inventive work in coming up with energy and ways of utilizing energy that would be environmentally safe and worthy. And there's a lot of them that aren't still alive.
Exactly. That's just what I was going to ask you. And how long did they live after they came out with that idea?
Or they bought off their invention and it never came to saw the light of day.
The other thing they do is declare it a matter of national security, seize it, patent it themselves, and then, of course, it goes to the dustbin. That's the other trick in that.
Right. So the whole thing is if it's logical, it really does have something behind it. But there often we're being sold stuff that we need to dig deeper and find out the reason behind it. Because all too often somebody's passing out bucks and saying, this is what we want you to say and sell. And if we start standing up and asking questions and saying, back when the 70s we had the first major energy shortage, supposed energy shortage, we should have had all these things that are just now starting to come back out and should have been, and I know are far much more advanced than we're being told they are. It's
yes.
Like the iPods. I bet you anything there's iPod 15 out there, but they're and they're introducing to us 2 and 3, and
say,
and one at a time so that they can market it to us and we get the junk. They know they're already defective because they're on to the 15th one.
Yes, and, exactly.
And until we quit giving me your junk, I want the stuff you're using.
yeah. And I would like something that lasted longer than a month.
I darn sure don't want to do Gates's R&D,
No.
I think people started finally getting a little bit of wise to that one,
Yes. Well, you just haven't been taking your pills now. That's what's wrong with you. You need your pharma.
This is the spooky part about it is for those of us that have started figuring things out, they just, as I talked to one intelligence person, he told me that, there isn't just, one or two versions of what, they're up to. They've got seven to ten layers thick. So in case, one lie doesn't work, they've got the next one. But, often you find that the further down it gets, the more absurd they get. And they will throw at us so many experts. Start looking at these experts,
Don't you just want to jump up and yell, don't you have something better to do? I'm an expert too and absolutely nothing, but I would be glad to get one of those jobs. I can write a skewed report as good as anybody.
No, I don't want to be their expert, man.
Well, the world would be a lot different place if I was writing that stuff. Either that or I'd probably be dead.
Well, it's just that, if we don't, the whole thing is you don't have to be that active to start making a difference. And particularly, you don't even have to organize. Just start asking questions. Just start saying, I don't want to do that. Why are you asking me to do that? No. Say no. I mean, there's the whole idea is that we do have a brain. That's the one thing they are afraid of. That's if you look at everything out there doing, they're after our brains. They
yes.
don't want us to have one, and because they know it's the most powerful thing we've got. And so,
and as long as you're thinking, and thinking and rationalizing and thinking critically, and that's another thing that I believe they're trying to destroy is the ability of people. I see this at work, and no offense to anyone, because I don't mean it in an offensive way. I just mean it as an observation of my own. This is what happens to people who get involved with churchianity. They suddenly suspend any rational, critical thinking skills, and they accept the preposterous. And they believe that God is trying to open a bank account for them. Now, if you're somebody like that that will believe that stuff, then you're a target because you've already evidenced that you're malleable, that you're controllable, that you can be manipulated. And so you have to be really careful about that. But this is to me, an indicator of where they want us to go. They want us to be easily controlled. I've just got done looking at a whole bunch of stuff about all of the psychotronic weapons the military has developed for mind control using
right.
EMF.
Huge programs and that kind of stuff. So, you know,
yeah.
I mean, when you figure out that they want to control every aspect of their lives, that's the one thing they can't stand is our having control.
Free thought.
Yeah, and free thought. It's
yep.
So, yeah, I mean, we're getting to the point of the end of the program here, and I don't know if we accomplished anything. But
I don't know either. Well, I'm sorry. You should have said shut up.
No. I'm just saying we're here is just asking questions and discussing, and that's what one of the things I feel. Hey, talk about it. Politics should not be something you can't talk about, and you know it's something that if you don't talk about it, somebody's going to control it or deal with it, and if mm-hmm. and then it is going to be out of your hands. So, you know, while we've got anything left in us. We are so far over the edge at this point in time. When I'm looking at the Declaration of Independence and realizing that what those people were rising up against is every bit of it is in place today, and we're not saying or doing anything about it, I think that's what that thing was for, is to stand up and start, you know, asking questions and saying, you know, we made this country. To be, I mean, there's a lot of questions in this avenue, but I will say that, you know, there is an ideal and a dream there that if we don't start harnessing it and going back to it, it's just going to be a figment of our imagination.
Well, I don't know, Mel. I keep trying to talk as fast as I can.
Well, we both are, and I just hope that, you know, people realize again that, you know, you can make a difference. And I've seen it time and time again in the most obscure ways when you do something and it just takes one and the other one sees. I mean, I remember one time, and this is, well, I'm closing it out. I remember one time I was driving home from Denver, and there was it was probably 30 miles long of a backed up lines of cars on I-70 because of the fall colors. And up, I looked up above me, and there was, I think, I-40, I think is the highway, and there wasn't a single car on there. And you had the side road there, and, you know, I can't think of the word I want, but anyways, the side of the road there, and I'm looking, there's nobody there. So I decided, I looked right up there, and the turnoff was right there where I was at, and I just looked over, and I just drove over in the little off to the side of the road and went up on I-40 and left that whole mess behind.
Like, who's going to run you down at that point?
I didn't do anything wrong. I just went back on the other road. I'm saying we don't have to sit there and do what everybody else does that doesn't seem to be going anywhere. You know?
Yeah.
So, and that's all I'm saying is, you know, we can think outside the box. And that's the whole thing, is it's thinking outside the box really does have its advantages. So, Marty, I want to thank you for coming on the program, and I hope we can do this again sometime.
Sure.
And keep up the good work, because you know, I know you're out there raising heck.
Not me. You must be confused. Thank you for having me on, okay. Melody. I really appreciate it.
Okay. Thanks a lot. Bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
And you're listening to KHEN LP 106.9 Salida, and that was Marty Oakley, and her program is True Squad, and it's on Blog Talk Radio. And again, if you type in her name, you'll also bring up her website and her blogs.